Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Bonnie Kay and the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-host is Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So, good evening, Misty. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good evening, Bonnie. How are you?
We're all trying to survive the snow and the ice storm of Philadelphia from yesterday. It was very traumatizing for me because, you know, I'm not into winter weather, and especially in October before Halloween.
I know. A little bit
it was very confusing. I thought maybe
early.
I lost a month. I was thinking maybe I lost a couple of months.
Maybe.
It was really frightening.
Wake up. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
So how are you doing?
Some inches in some places. I mean, I love snow, but I don't like that much.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in Florida, I guess you don't have to, right?
Yeah, we don't have to worry about snow down here. We had rainy weather. It's, I guess, just some still remnants of different depressions floating around. But I can't complain. The weather's perfect compared to where you're at right now, so I'm not going to complain.
Okay, that sounds good, because it's not going to change anything.
Yeah,
but I'm really excited because we have a really special guest with us tonight, and this is a friend of mine who I've never actually had the opportunity to meet, but we've corresponded through the years, and I'm looking forward to having a chance to meet him next week, and so I'm going to get him on the show with us. His name is Greg Allen, so let's see if we can get Greg on the line. Greg, is that you?
I'm here, yes.
Oh, welcome to our show. You're here with me and Misty.
Thank you guys for having me.
Hello. I'm really excited you would join us. And
I'm up here in that bad weather too, Bonnie, with you in Jersey.
Isn't it scary? I mean, it's October and we have like 3 inches of snow.
I don't think our minds can wrap around it yet, you know, right before Halloween, seeing so much snow and ice, you know.
I know, it's really bizarre. I was really, like I say, really scared about it because, you know, I'm not a snow person or an ice person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just like to stay in the house when that stuff happens. And I thought, oh, my goodness, it's October. What's it going to be like in January?
I don't want to
think about it. I'll
have
to be visiting you, Misty, in Florida. Misty's in Florida.
Come on down. Weather'll be nice by then.
So, Greg, we really I know this is kind of like an odd kind of show for you to come on to, the Straight Wives Talk Show. But, you know, I was just so moved by your book, and because it really did have a theme of straight wives in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we always like having gay men come on our show, you know, to shed some insight for our women listeners and also to give support to our male listeners, because we have many wonderful male supporters who have gone through the situation of being married and came to terms with themselves during that marriage and, you know, who I've worked with in coming out to their wives and moving on.
Right.
And I'm sure in your experiences you've met men like that, correct?
I have. You know, I've met through the years, you know, men that have been in the closet, men that have been married and that came out of the closet. And some of those themes definitely found themselves into my fiction work here.
Right. And can we tell people a little bit, first of all, or can you tell people? And it's really funny, I was telling people in my support chat room that we have prior to this show that, you know, it had been a while since I had, you know, read your book when you initially
mm-hmm.
sent it to me. And it was so nice to see it come out in print again last month. And, you know, because, like I say, it looks beautiful. And I thought, well, I really wanted to have you as a guest on the show. And I'd really kind of forgotten some of the themes. You know, it's been a couple of years.
Sure, right.
So I reread the whole book this week, which for me is a lot because I'm not much of a reader. I don't mind writing, but I'm not a big reader. But it wasn't like I just read it because you're coming on the show, because I could have just picked and chosen, you know, an excerpt here or there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was just such a compelling story that I found myself just having to read every page of it.
Wow,
not only
thank you.
Reading every page, but then going back over some of the pages because, you know, there was just so much in this story. And
mm-hmm.
I just want to let our listeners know, if you do have any questions for Greg that on any particular subject at all, you know, he'll give you his best insight. And you can always call us here at area code 646-716-4893 or you can email me at bonk@aol.com if you have any questions and you don't want to call in and you would just like to ask Greg, and I'll be happy to read it for you. But, Greg, can you start off by, first of all, telling us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll move into your book.
Sure. I moved to New York when I was 18 from Texas. Grew up in a very religious family, Southern Baptist boy in Texas. Came out of the closet the following year when I was 19. Didn't come out the best time to come out and tell your family because my mother's mother had just passed away. And that's when I came out to her. And pretty much since then, I have led an out life. I say that with a certain bit of, you know, stipulation in that I think there's a part as a gay man, you're constantly coming out in different in different ways. I feel all of my friends and people around me now know that I'm gay. And as I wrote this book and as I chose to come out with it, I thought, you know, I can't play that game of, well, am I out or am I not? And just meaning, do we choose to say the words or not? I'm always out, but sometimes people just choose not to say pronouns or certain things when they go out. I'm very much out now. I think social media and Facebook has really played a hand into chasing some people back towards the past. I found a lot of people from high school through Facebook, and all of a sudden, it was like I was thrust back into the closet again, so to speak, because of the way they made me feel online. We all think we're the same people we were 20, 25 years ago, and we're not. And once they saw pictures of me and my husband online and the civil union we were able to have here in New Jersey, and we had a party, it really shook some people from my past. And I found myself dealing with those old feelings and the pain and the angst of coming out of the closet once again.
Mm-hmm. You know, but how did your family accept it when you did come out to them?
When I came out, at first there were some issues of, not really disbelief, but it wasn't full acceptance head on. I come from a family of a mother who reads everything she can get her hands on about any subject that happens to be going on in our family. So once I came out, I also came out and said, I'm moving back to New York. I'm going back up there. I've dealt with this my whole life. You guys have to deal with this now. Not the nicest thing to say as a 19-year-old, but that's how I approached it. They had said they'd like for me to get into therapy, and at first I think my mother's thought was, well, I want you to get into therapy so that you can change. You know, we need to change. This isn't a life you want to live. As soon as I came back to New York and my mother started reading as much as she could about homosexuality, her mindset changed to, I want you to be able to deal with this life. It's going to be a hard life, and therapy is going to help you deal with this part of your life. Jump ahead many, many years. My mother's been in New York. She's gone to the Gay Pride Parade. My sister sings, and my sister's a singer in Dallas and sings in gay bars and gay clubs. So now they're, and my father passed away a few years back, but my family's very accepting of it now. At first, it was a tough road for a Southern Baptist family for that to deal with, but now it's a very different story.
What year would you say that was when you first came out to your mom when you were 19?
It was 1988.
Okay, and the reason why I ask you that, because I'm going to tell you some things that kind of disturb me in your book.
Okay.
And I guess that maybe it's because of the time period that you came out that you're really familiar with what was going on back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a time that I think a lot of people have kind of either put out of their mind or never really experienced because they weren't part of the gay world at that point, and they didn't have any idea really that they had any connection to the gay world, because many of the women that we have had no idea they were married to gay men until much later.
Right.
But, you know, I was certainly aware of it because I was doing support groups during, you know, the mid-80s with couples. And to me, it was just such a very depressing time, you know, with the whole AIDS issue. You know, when people back then were not living with AIDS, they were dying from AIDS.
Right.
And this whole country was just going, you know, I guess you know, AIDS hysteria, I guess that's the only way to put it, you know, back in the 80s, where there was very little known and people were just such, you know, there was such suspicion about every little thing that would create AIDS that if you went near someone, if you drank from the same cup, if you used the same napkin, if you breathed on the person, you know, it was just a very depressing time. And I think that reading your book really brought me back to that time in a very authentic way, which really, you know, says a lot for you as a writer to be able to create that feeling in a book.
Well, Bonnie, and I can tell you other people have also had that same feeling reading the book. Many gay men have written to me that have read it saying it definitely took them back to, if you think about it, yes, it's our history, but it's not that long ago of a history. I chose to start the book in the 70s, and the book goes through 15 years. For the people on you know listening to your show, I can tell them it follows the lives of two brothers from the South, from Tennessee. One brother is gay. His younger brother is a straight, very conservative man. And it follows their lives for 15 years as the older brother says, I got to get out of the small town. You stay here. You deal with mom. I'm heading to New York to become a star. And he does. And he goes off and gets very involved in all that there was in that time period, the late 70s, in the entertainment business, with the wild partying, with the sex, with the drugs, and he really got caught up in that world. Part of what I really wanted to deal with was some internal homophobia that he was dealing with. I think if people read the book, they don't always think in those terms of, well, Jacob seemed like he was so out when he was back home. But I tell the story from two perspectives. It's Jacob's sometimes chapters, and sometimes it's the younger brother's, Noah's. And so when people question me on that, I said, go back and the stuff at the beginning that you're thinking of when he was younger, we're hearing through Noah's eyes. We're hearing through the brother's eyes. And in his mind, Jacob was totally accepting of who he was. He was always accepting. He was pushing it in our face. Because I think a lot of times when someone comes out of the closet, those around them feel, why is everything every other word that comes out of your mouth is gay, gay, gay. And they feel like it's being shoved down their throat. So I wanted to show that aspect from the other brother. For me as a writer, it was a great thrill to be able to go back and forth on two sides of an issue and be able to tell a story in that way.
And, you know, at first, when I first read it, I'm not sure if I loved it that much.
Mm-hmm.
But, boy, when I read it this time, it was just so good. I mean, I just enjoyed it so much. Moving back, you know, in fact, it was funny because sometimes you went two chapters about one brother.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to be switching back to, you know, Noah. No, I'm still a second chapter about Jacob. And then I was kind of happy because I was really into the Jacob story. But, well, Jacob was, I think, a total narcissist, right?
Egomaniac, big time.
Egomaniac,
yeah.
Narcissist, totally into himself, very controlling of every situation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it seemed to me to have a lot of adult ADD also. But he was a model, very, you know, successful model, internationally known. And living, you know, he had a lover. You know, he left Tennessee with a lover, correct, with Gary?
Correct, yes.
And they moved to New York, and they had a life together, and he was constantly cheating on Gary.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he loved Gary, but he didn't really equate love and sex together. You know, I guess he didn't feel too much guilt. Would you say that's true?
I think that's absolutely true. He got pulled into that world of the sex and then would say, well, this is what Gary deserves with being with me. He has to be with me, and I have to do this in my business, quote unquote.
Yeah, I mean, he just did whatever he wanted to do without regard for much of anything else. And he was very fortunate that he had an agent, Rachel, who really adored him. And, of course, she was making money off of his career. But beside that, she really adored him, you know, as it showed later on. But, you know, where do you think the big change was, like as a writer? You know, did you know other people who were in this situation who are out, you know, who were openly gay, living a gay life, having a gay lover, having lots of gay romance on the side, and then all of a sudden, one day everything changes over?
Well, you know, it's not that I've known that many people that happened to.
Mm-hmm.
what happened was, you know, I started watching so much in the news with the Ted Haggarts of the world,
mm-hmm.
and those people that we keep seeing in the news that all of a sudden, many times strong people speaking adversely towards things that were going on in the homosexual community, and then they would be caught up in some sort of scandal and some kind of you know, homosexual scandal so many times. And I thought, where does that come from? How do you get inside of that person's head, first off, to think of why they were living this way and what makes them think they can always get away from it? That's partly how I created the character of Jacob, because I really tied into that ego and that pride and so many politicians and whatnot that think whether it's a gay or straight sexual liaison they get caught up in, they think, well, I'll never get caught. It won't happen to me. So I wanted to get into that world and handle some themes of that nature. Making the choice, as I did, of telling Jacob's story and for your listeners to know how this ties into your show, something pretty large happens in Jacob's life where basically he pulls back, he goes back to his religious roots from his childhood and decides, I need to cry out and have God save me and God help me.
This is after he really hit bottom, so to speak.
Exactly.
You know, with his drug addiction.
Right. So that's what I'm just saying. So to keep up with, you know, to keep up with the people on that are listening here on the radio, he makes that decision and basically decides, well, then I owe this to God and this must be what I'm supposed to do, and goes back into the closet. And that's how it ties into the straight women married to a gay man. My character, Jacob, goes back in the closet and marries a woman after he had already been living out for a while. So it's, in a way, it's very different from, I know, from what you're used to discussing.
No, it's
on your
not.
Show.
I'm going to tell you why.
No?
It's not that different.
Okay.
I thought what was interesting about this story, and this happens to a number of our women, you know, a lot of women don't understand homosexuality, and I never place the blame on them because I feel a lot of men don't understand it, and they're gay, and they still
mm-hmm.
don't understand it. And I think that, you know, especially going back to the 1980s, you know, and early 90s, when people really didn't know much and before computerization. And I know
mm-hmm.
that for myself, growing up as a child of the 70s, living out in California, you know, where everything, anything went, any kind of sex went. You know, and we grew up in the days of Kinsey telling us, well, it's not unusual for men to try sex with other men, that,
mm-hmm.
you know, men-to-men experiences happen 73% of all the cases. So even if you would have heard that somebody was gay, much like, you know, Jacob's wife, you would think, well, he tried it, he didn't like it, or this is not what he wants, he can change. And
mm-hmm.
I think that when you come from a very religious family, you know, I find this especially with our Christian women, who have grown up, you know, in the South a lot of times, but in the Northwest, you know, in other places where it's not an urban city.
Mm-hmm.
And they belong to very kind of strict kinds of churches where people do believe you can pray gay away, and that if you pray hard enough, you know, it will happen for you. That even if a woman knows that there was some kind of a past, she thinks it's over.
Right.
But that's what really struck me, that this was not that unusual.
Well, and I think sometimes we will tell ourselves what we need to believe to get through that situation as well. You know, I think the pray away the gay, I have met some people that have gone to some of those different organizations. And oddly enough, the ones that I've met and I've spoken to have told me that it's still a daily battle. In my mind, that means, well, then God didn't change you. If you're having a daily battle with it, that you have to make a conscious choice to turn your head away from, and some of this, of course, I put in the book, turn your head away from that pornographic magazine hanging on a newsstand, or divert your eyes to not look at a certain man on the street, then it's not gone. It's still in you, and you're still fighting with it. So I find that.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bonnie.
I was going to ask you at the end of the story, not to give away everything, but, I mean, it's just, I tell all my women, this book is just wonderful, and I'm going to be promoting it in my next newsletter in a couple of weeks. But the thing is that, you know, like towards the latter part of the story, a young man comes into the congregation after Jacob is already a minister now,
mm-hmm.
and it's a young gay man, and there's an obvious attraction there that he's fighting off,
right,
you know, throughout the rest of that story. But was that purposely done by you to kind of give that message that it is what it is?
Well, it was done for two reasons. It was done, I wanted to show a gay Christian, if you will, since that's what Jacob is declaring to be as well in the book. I wanted to show another generation of it to say, I don't have to take the same path that you took. I can go down a different path and not say, well, I must stay away from being gay if I'm going to also call myself a Christian. I wanted to show that characterization. I also did specifically put in some of the sexual tension between the two at certain times, that it was there, that it was still a struggle for Jacob to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that came from me, some of that came from my editor after reading it, saying, you need a little bit more of that in there. They wanted to drive that up. They felt that point should be, you know, driven home more as well.
And I think it really was. And I really feel bad that now that I've reread the book, that I don't have a real, I wanted more of an ending. Is there going to be a second part of this book?
Right now, I don't have one.
I want to see what happened to the children, and I want to see if they really got adopted. Or
There could absolutely, I could go further with this. I think a lot of people talk about, the arc of the straight brother, of Noah, of what he goes through in watching his brother and how the changes in his brother's life, how it affects him, how it affects his political beliefs, his social beliefs, a lot of things that character gets to go through and change. Many readers have written to me grabbing onto that and thanking me for putting that story to coincide, you know, with Jacob's journey too in there.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was important to have that in there.
Let me ask you this. The title, Well With My Soul, it's really strange because, you know, I'm not Christian, I'm Jewish, so I'm not familiar with this terminology.
Right.
And, of course, you know, I saw it several times in the book. And ironically, I'm helping another author here in Philadelphia, you know, with editing for her book.
Mm-hmm.
And she was infected by her ex-husband, you know, with HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he happened to be a pastor in a church. And in her book, it said the same words, Well With My Soul.
Well, it's based on a hymn. The hymn is called It Is Well With My Soul. And when that hymn was written, the story behind that hymn was the lyricist Horatio, who wrote that actual song. I have his name will come to me. Horatio Spafford. He was... he had a horrible life. I mean, the Great Chicago Fire ruined everything in their life. I mean, this is back, you know, in the 1800s. His wife and daughters were on a boat going from America to London that sank. And then he received a telegram from his wife saying, saved alone. She was the only one saved. The daughters drowned. And he was taking a boat over to meet his wife. And as he crossed over the part where his daughters had died, he wrote the lyrics to It Is Well With My Soul. And the hymn itself deals with really finding a true peace within yourself. I chose that not only because I like the hymn, because the irony of the title to the characters in this book. It is not well with Jacob's soul at all. And much of the book, it is not well with Noah's soul, as they are both trying to find that inner peace in however way they can in their lives.
Yeah, I just, you know, like I say, I wasn't really familiar with that, but I figured it came from somewhere since I read it now twice.
Bonnie, you made an interesting comment, too, about, you know, the time period of before the Internet and things of that nature, which completely has changed so much. I know for closeted gay men, I've been working on a short piece about that very thing, about how the Internet has changed with men that use the Internet as their secret escape, as their loophole, if you will, around cheating on their wives. But I really chose this specifically for this period to come out of that free-spirited world of the 70s into that conservative era of, you know, of Reaganomics and so much during the 80s, I wanted to make, you know, put it there for a reason, and because of, as you said earlier, with what was going on with AIDS and HIV through the 80s. For me, in the 80s meant there was nowhere for me to go as I was learning about, as a high school kid, about my own sexuality. I worked in a library. I worked in a local library. And while I was too afraid to check out any books on the subject, I would spend my breaks, I would spend time in the stacks of that library reading any book I could get my hand on about homosexuality and then putting it back on the shelf. So it was such a different period of trying to find out, who am I, what are these feelings I'm having, what's going on in my life, that I definitely wanted to try to convey some of that different period, especially people in smaller towns. The fact that the book starts out in Tennessee, and then as so many gay men have done, they flock to the larger cities to find people, you know, of the like mind, is the way they would see it. Now, like I said, you can go on the internet and find many people like yourself, but prior to that, people were going to, you know, San Francisco, L.A., New York, to find other people that were the same as them.
Exactly. And there were certain sections of the country where there was a comfort level because you could find other people like yourself. And as you were saying, as you were growing up, there was just such limited information. So that's why, you know, whenever women say, well, how could I not know this? Well, it was very easy. We didn't know it. And even today, people don't understand it. You know, when I was growing up, Greg, and maybe you can relate to this, I was taught that with homosexuality, it meant that a man likes a man and a woman likes a woman,
mm-hmm.
and that that's who they go with. You know, and we were never told that a man likes a woman when he's gay.
Right.
You know, so it didn't quite register with us. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, on the show, we always have discussions and guests, you know, who are guys, who talk about the hardships they went through when they were younger and how they fought it. And I think that in many cases, you know, men think that when they meet the right woman, if they love her enough, that that will make those, you know, nagging urges go away.
Right.
And there are many men who just are not able to come to terms with their homosexuality as early as you did, although they all are willing to say that they knew they had attractions to guys, you know, at an early age.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm
not quite sure
how this works. I'm really not. I wish, you know, there could be like, you know, at the age of 5, everybody knows he's gay or she's gay, and then they take it from there. You know, I'm not sure why some people know early, some people don't know till later, some people are comfortable with it, other people, I mean, I understand why people are self-hating with it, but, you know, because of society, but there should be an easier way.
Well, and it's strange because I can think back as early as kindergarten that I can pinpoint different things in my life when I felt like, looking back, I think I knew then. I knew for sure by 7th grade. I knew I was. I still stayed in the closet. I still, you know, had girlfriends. I still went to my senior prom with a girl, but I came out to her right before we went to prom.
What did you know at that age? Did you know that you were gay, or you knew you had attractions for men?
I knew by 7th grade, I knew that it was attraction to men. I definitely knew the attraction to men. That was when I was coming into terms with dealing with my own sexual fantasies and puberty and all of that, and I started noticing mine were more about, well, we had male teachers then. We had female and male teachers, and mine were about the male teacher. And I'm like, huh, this is different. This, you know, this is not the way it is supposed to be. This is not the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's all we're taught is the norm. What is the norm? And I think so many people can spend, as you're well aware, a lifetime fighting that, thinking, if I fight it hard enough, it'll just go away. It can go away. And I'm certain that's why some of the people and some friends I've known that have gotten married to women thought, I can fight it, it'll go away, or it's too hard to deal with it, I will go into this marriage and I will have children and be a husband and be that spouse and be what I'm supposed to be, what society and my family has told me I'm supposed to be, I will go down this road and do it. Only to, you know, many
only
of them
to
later
find
on.
Out
then.
That, you know, you can only, you know, I always say it's like a jack-in-the-box. You can keep pushing it down every time it rears its, you know, head up and keep, you know, putting down the lid. But eventually, every time, you know, the music comes on, you know, it comes, pops up again.
Absolutely.
Now, there's no way to run away from this. Like in your book with Jacob, no matter how hard he tried, and he became a minister, and everything was about God, 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 but those attractions were still there. They weren't going away. And, you know, this is what I tell men all the time, you know, you can't be what you're not. But I know a lot of men try it. I just wanted to ask your opinion on something. You know, we've brought this up, you know, in a couple of different shows, and I have it, I'm writing about this in my newsletter for this coming month. First of all, let's go back to the issue of gay and men who say, like you were talking about Ted Haggard. Ted Haggard considers himself straight with issues. How do you feel about that?
My honest opinion is I think those issues are that you can't be truthful about who you really are. That's what his issues are. When a man says that to me, I'm like, you're not straight with issues. Yeah, that's just not the truth.
The
issue is you're gay, right. The issue is you can't handle being gay. That's your issue.
Yeah, because to me, you know, I know that people think I'm very black and white, because I am. You know, to me, the great dividing line is penis. You know, if a man wants one, then he's gay. And, you know,
They can say all they want. You know, they can get into the, well, I fall further on this end of the line, or, you know, with bisexual and this and that. And I'm like, I kind of go where you go, Bonnie.
Bisexuality is, you know, if you were truly bisexual, why are you only looking for men for sex?
Right.
You know, you have a wife and you're not sleeping with her, but you're going after men for sex. That does not make you bisexual. That makes you homosexual.
I feel that homosexuality is much more than just sex. I mean, I have been with my husband for 11 years. We have a wonderful relationship. Anyone that looks at our relationship sees what a heterosexual couple would have. We own our home together. We get up. We go to work. We live our lives the same as any other couple. You know, that sex part is just part of being in a homosexual relationship.
Do you think that's true, though, for, you know, because I always try to separate this in my mind. I believe that's what I call authentically gay. I think there are men who are living in this world of straight. You know, I call them limbo men.
Okay.
You know, they're emotionally straight but physically gay because they can't accept, you know, the gay world. They're not comfortable in it. You know, they don't want to live in it. They don't want to be part of it. They just want to have gay sex.
That's like people being on the down low.
Yeah, very low down, in my opinion.
Yeah,
but the point is that, you know, I believe that once you cross that line, and this is what I really resent, the fact that men can really say that, you know, they are straight because they're living a straight life, but that doesn't make you straight if you're sleeping with men.
I agree. I completely agree with you.
But there are those men who say it's just a sex thing, and I say homosexuality is not about that. And a lot of women, I try to explain it to them when they first come to me, and they say, my husband's willing to give up, you know, his family, his children, his whole life just for sex. And I say it's not about sex. It's about who you are as a person.
Right.
And sometimes it's really hard for me to explain that, you know, to people who are very angry at the moment, and I understand why they're angry. But could you explain a little more about that, you know, that it's not just about sex, it's about who you are?
Well, I think that if it were just sex, then everyone would be living a life of, I'll just be married to this woman, and then we will have our rules and our family up on the wall of, you do these chores, you do this, and oh, by the way, I get to go have sex with this, with a man every once in a while. And it would just be one element of it, and that's really not what it's about. I mean, it's the truth of who I am as a gay man is, I love my partner, I love being with him. It's not that, well, if he were a woman, it would still be okay. No, he's a man. He's my soulmate. He's my life partner. You know, yes, I love having sex with him, but it's not just about the sex. So I think that, I also think it's hard for a woman that if she finds this out about her husband, all of a sudden it's because it's with a man. I think if you thought they were leaving you for another woman, I think it's a completely different type of betrayal for the wife.
It's not just a betrayal of sexual betrayal. It's a betrayal of, you know, it's not an infidelity betrayal. It's a whole life betrayal.
Exactly. I think that's
And, you know,
that.
The thing is that, Greg, these guys are who get married, you know, even though I know that most of them do it, they do love their wives when they get married. You know, they think they can pull it off. You know, they go in with good intentions. But when it falls apart, rather than internalize it, they externalize it. And they blame their wives for their unhappiness. You know,
right.
I'm trapped. You know, my wife is not doing as good a job, or she's not as supportive, she's not as pretty, you know, she needs to, you know, they'll do anything to blame their wife. She doesn't keep a clean enough house, you know, instead of accepting, well, the marriage just isn't working because I'm a gay man, you know, they'd rather sit and blame their wife.
Right, and I also think that they, there's a confusion on the men's part about the difference between a wife and having a really great girlfriend. I'm a gay man, and I have to say, I have many women in my life that I'm very close to, that I consider to be some of my dearest friends. It doesn't make them my wives, though sometimes I joke and say they're my wives, you know. It doesn't make them, it doesn't make us a married couple. It means just because I'm a gay man does not mean I do not need to have women in my life. I find a very special place for those women in my life. But I think these men that stay in the closet, maybe they're having that feeling. They're thought, well, I can, what I'm feeling there for this person, well, I'm just going to go ahead and walk down that aisle with her and make her my wife. I think they're confusing that issue of, I think we all still need to have the opposite sex in our life. I don't just run around and only hang out with gay men. I don't do it, you know. I think there's a place to have women and men both in my life. Bonnie, you and I have talked, and I know you have your gay male friends that are also in your life, and they're very lucky to have you as part of their life as well. But I don't think that means I need to go and marry them and push down this other part of me just because I have that need to have a female in my life.
Yeah, and you know what it is, I think, you know, I always, in one of my books, I have a checklist of a prototype of woman that a gay man consciously or subconsciously or unconsciously looks for when they're getting, want to get married.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing to me that almost every woman that I've dealt with over the years, and that's like over 70,000 of them already, all had gay friends prior to the time of marriage. They were, you know, I would say that 80% of the women I work with are in some field of the helping field. Either teachers, nurses, mental health workers, social workers, you know, psychologists. It's amazing to me how many are in the, you know, helping field. And I think that gay men who need to keep their secret, you know, a secret, are more drawn towards women who have compassion. And if the news does get out, that they're not going to, you know, jump all over them, because they are those kind of compassionate women who will try to help them along the way, or at least they're thinking that on some level. So
you're
it's
right.
Not like my women were, you know, against gay. They were always, you know, were involved with gay friends or gay family. But it's different when it enters your marriage. It's
right.
Totally different. And, you know, especially when you look, you know, there's two kinds of marriages that our women are in. They're either in good marriages with somebody who's their best friend, or they're in horrible marriages with men who just, you know, everything's falling apart and they're just trying to control a situation. But the women who are in those wonderful marriages with their best friend, you know, it's so hard for them to accept that, you know, their marriage is ending. And, you know, they can't understand why, like I say, the husband's willing to give up everything for sex. And I'm repeating, it's not about sex, it's about who you are as a man.
Right.
But these are really complex situations. And I guess one I wanted to bring up to you, maybe you can explain it a little better. I don't know if you read the article. It just came out about a week and a half ago. And, in fact, you're in Jersey. So this was about a mayor of a city in New Jersey. Did you hear about him? Let me just get his name. Because, you know, he was a mayor of New Jersey, former Republican congressional candidate accused of paying male escort for sex. Did you read about that?
That one just came. I did not see that one.
Okay, this came out last week.
Okay.
And I'm just pulling it up here so I can tell you where this man is from in Jersey. Just pull it right up. up here. It says that a suburban New Jersey mayor who unsuccessfully sought a congressional seat as a Republican is being accused of paying for sex with a male escort. The Burlington County Times reports that Medford, New Jersey Mayor Chris Myers, have you heard of him?
Mm-mm. Okay.
Okay, is being accused by a male escort of paying for sex during an October 2010 encounter in a California hotel. Now, this is the thing that I find interesting. You know, he is married.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another congressman or senator from Indiana, like a couple months ago, I don't know if you read about him.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Who also, you know, was having sex from a guy on Craigslist.
Yes.
And at that time, he was telling the guy, well, you know, I'm in the Senate. He showed him identification. And then I'm reading this story, and it says that, you know, the guy, you know, he was showing him his township identification card and gold ID shield as proof, you know, that's what he offered this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why do you think these men are, like, bragging,
well, this
you
is,
know, to
it,
their male escorts about their position in life?
It's, you know what, and this goes back to what I said, whether it's gay or straight. I mean, I read the John Edwards, you know, biography, and I feel that it goes back to that pride and ego. There is some sort of ego with these men in higher places that think I'm not going to get caught, and I can sit there and brag about who I am. And they're crazy thinking in this day and age that someone's not going to turn around and turn them in. There was a website recently that had about 15 different men, politicians or religious men, that had been caught up in a sex scandal, and most of them were in a homosexual scandal. All of them had different reasons for it. Oh, I hired this guy on Craigslist to carry my bags because I have a bad back. Well, why were you looking in the sex ads for that? Every one of them had a strange excuse for it. But in the time, I feel like they get caught up in some sort of, first off, no one's gonna catch me. It's not gonna happen to me. I'm not gonna be the one that gets splattered across the newspapers tomorrow. And I think that the thrill of it really gets to them, and they pretty much get off on that thrill in what they're doing. Again, I'll go back to the book. It's part of those elements that I put in Jacob, because someone that is so overbearing and maniacal in the way they're thinking of, you know, I have Jacob saying, God told me to tell you, blah, blah, blah. Someone that has that thought power of, I'm so high up, I'm this high of a politician, or I'm next in line talking to God to tell you this, they have a completely different way of seeing reality, and it's not the reality that you and I live in, that's for sure.
No, it's just that, you know, I would think that these men who are trying to live these closeted lives, you know, they're married, they have children, you know, they're certainly not out to the public, and most likely they weren't out to their families, you know, before they got caught. You know, you would think they wouldn't want to have to be living on that edge quite that far.
But you know what? It's
everything.
Like, it's like in a drug. It's like an addiction. It's,
you're right.
Living on the edge of that sexual need is much like an alcoholic who has to get to that bar and get that drink. And they know getting into that bar and getting that drink means they could be seen, or they have to drive home, and they're going to put their own life and other people's life at risk by getting the car to drive home, but they had to get there and get that drink. I think these people that have this sexual need and sexual addiction, it's the same thing. Their thought process goes right out the window because they're going to do what they need to do to get that fix. So I view it in a very similar way to an addiction like that.
So tell us about how the book is doing.
The book has been doing really well. Not that I know all the numbers that are going on, but I can see, of course, what it's doing online on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. I was on Sirius Radio this past Thursday morning, and I know there was a lot of good feedback from that. I've been hitting different bookstores. I can't wait till this coming Saturday be in Giovanni's room. Get to be
I'm really excited.
Philly.
So I'm going to be, you know, getting to meet you and give you a big hug in person.
Good.
Along with a very dear friend of mine who's coming in from, you know, to meet you also. And, you know, for anybody who's in the Philadelphia, New Jersey, Delaware area who, you know, is available on Saturday, Greg is going to be at Giovanni's Bookstore, which is a gay bookstore here in Philadelphia. And do you have the address? If not, I'll get it.
Oh, you know what? I don't have it right here on me. I'm not sitting at my computer. I went away from everything so
That's
I can
no
get
problem.
On the phone with you.
I'll be happy to get it because I've been in touch with Ed, the, you know,
I guess
the owner of the store. And told him how
the other thing is, I've been getting some great reviews. You know, the thing to do now, of course, is blog tours, and I've been doing a lot of internet interviews and reviews, and the reviews coming back from across the gamut, from straight women, from gay men, is that this is a book for everyone, though it's a hard read to get through, meaning the rawness of it, the truthfulness, not that it's, you know, hard to read from the way I've written it. They feel it's an important message for people to hear. One woman up in Alaska wrote, she said, does it matter your views on homosexuality, religion? This reading this book will make you look at how you've made certain choices in your own life, is the way she worded it. And I thought that was really special to hear that from her.
Well, I think it's not only that, but I think it's a book that appeals to everybody, no matter, you know, what situation you're in. You know, it's really a book about human nature.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the best in human nature, the worst in human nature, and how people try to, you know, change into something that they're not and still are never able to do so. You know, I think there's just so many different aspects of it. You even threw in a nice Jewish girl at the end there to marry Noah.
See?
I thought was really very admirable of you. Thank you on behalf of us Jewish women.
Well,
but,
you know, I didn't want to make it a one religion book, that's for sure.
Giovanni's room is on 345 South 12th Street here in Philadelphia.
Thank you.
So
at 5:30.
Yes, at 5:30 this coming Saturday. And tell us what you're going to be doing there.
I'll be doing some reading from the book. So I'll be reading from it. I'll talk about the book. I won't go into as much detail here because, you know, I wanted to share more about what the book was exactly about with your listeners. Otherwise, I don't give all the twists and turns of the book, but I'll be discussing it, and then I'll be signing some copies of the book.
That sounds great. And if people want to buy your book, Well With My Soul, it can be found on Amazon.com and also on BarnesandNoble.com, right?
Right.
And do you have a website yet?
I do. I am GGAllen, A-L-L-E-N, .net.
GGAllen. Let me just look it up so I can bookmark it. I'm sorry, GGAllen.net.
Yeah.
Okay, and that way I can send the link to other people and link your book into my next newsletter. And, you know, it's not often that I really recommend books, but I really recommend this book. I just think it's just an important read. Even though it's fiction, you know, and like I say, I'm not much of a fiction reader, there's just so much truth to this fiction. So this is not a fantasy story, and this is not, you know, a futuristic story. This is a story about real people, even though it is a fiction book, but it's based on reality during that time. And for people who want to learn more about the 80s and coming out issues and, you know, the different paths in life that men took and about going back into the closet, which is, you know, really unusual, you know, but it does happen that people are really out and they go back in. And we see a lot of that with the ex-gay movement, which, you know, I guess you're a little familiar with that because you were referring to it before.
Mm-hmm.
And how people really spend years living really tortured lives trying to be who they can't be. And I think that's really what it comes down to, don't you?
Absolutely. And Bonnie, and I have to thank you because, you know, it was several years ago, as you mentioned, that I found you on the internet. I came across your website and took a chance and sent you an email and asked if you would read an early copy of this to try to get a testimonial from you. And I really appreciate you doing that for me when you did.
Well, it was my pleasure. And I really think I enjoyed it so much more around this time. You know, it was just
good.
It was like, you know, really good when I read it the first time. It was even better this time. And this
thank
is the kind of book that, you know, you can read again. And I will. But in the meantime, I will be happy to promote it, and hopefully our women will start to buy it, and hopefully you'll have a good showing at the Giovanni's on Saturday. And like I said, I'll be looking forward to meeting you.
Excellent.
Is your husband coming with you?
He absolutely will be there.
Well, he won't be minding that you're getting a big hug from an older woman, right?
He won't mind at all.
Okay, I'll give him one, too. How's that?
Good. Good.
All right. Well, Greg, I want to thank you so much. Misty, did you have any questions?
No, just thank you for being on here, and thank you for the book. I think it's going to be a great book for a lot of different populations to read.
Thank you, Misty. I've been listening to some of your back shows online with you and Bonnie's conversation.
Good.
So I appreciate listening to those.
Good. Thank you. Thank you for being. Good luck with your book.
Thank you.
All right, Greg, and I'll be seeing you on Saturday. Very excited.
Okay,
you getting there like at 5:30, or will you be there early?
I'm probably going to get there a little bit earlier.
Okay, well, so will I be.
Okay.
All right, I'll see you on Saturday.
All righty.
All right, thanks again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
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 Wasn't he a great guest?
Absolutely. I love hearing stories where, I couldn't help but think of the story as you and him were talking, Brokeback Mountain, how much that the straight wife was just so left out of the loop, you know. It clearly wasn't a message delivered or anything on the straight wife side, but it was an important film, but just
well,
sort
this,
of left
this
us
book
out.
Is...
In this book, it sounds like he really got the perspective, you know, from you and him talking. It sounds like he really got it. Really got it down.
He does have
the
perspective. And you know what? I'll buy a copy while I'm there, you know, and send it to you, Misty, because it's for you to read it. Oh, it's my pleasure. But you know what I like so much about this story is that what was different than Brokeback Mountain is that the women in Brokeback Mountain really were clueless,
mm-hmm.
you know, until the one caught her husband with the fishing box and the other one, you know, wasn't quite sure. But the woman who married, you know, the main character in this book, I mean, she knew about his past, but she really loved him, and she really believed that God had entered his life and changed him. And I think that, you know, some women really do believe that God has that power to change them. And it reminded me of, you know, our conversation with this Suzette a couple of weeks ago, remember?
Mm-hmm.
When she was talking about her husband that she married the first time because, you know, they came from a very religious background.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then they got divorced. And then he, you know, was part of the, you know, the choir ministry. And he came back to her and told her, look, you know, I was wrong. You know, I prayed to God. I was changed.
Yeah.
And she believed him. And it wasn't such a far throw, you know, that people can believe this.
I know. And it sounds like I can't wait to get that copy because as you and he were talking, I thought, well, I wish I could be there. I would love to meet him in person and give him a hug, too, for really investigating that side of the story. I mean, to be passionate for that side.
He wrote it very authentically. You know, he wrote from the wife's point of view very authentically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this
mm-hmm.
woman really loved him, and even though he infected her, you know, and in the end, unfortunately, they both die. But, you know, she stood by him through everything. And, you know, that love never wavered.
Mm. Well, let's keep our fingers crossed that this turns into a movie. Wouldn't that be great for him?
It really would be. And he certainly deserves it. It's a great story.
Mm-hmm.
So once
Sounds
again, it's Gregory Allen, Well With My Soul. You can get it on Amazon.com. And I'll be announcing it in my next newsletter, so you can order it that way. That'll be out, you know, mid-November. And, Misty, I'm really excited that we had this opportunity to speak to Greg.
Me too. It's so wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Also, I just wanted to mention that next Sunday night, I'm really excited because we're having one of our women who wrote for Straight Wives, Shattered Lives, Volume 2, and a longtime member of our support network, Dolly, come on the show. And, you know, Straight Wives, Shattered Lives, too, had some very compelling stories in there. You know, we talked to Wendy a couple of weeks ago, and Wendy was a great guest, as always, and really gave her insight into her very sad story of her marriage. And, I think that of all the stories in there, if I had to pick the top three of horrible stories, Dolly's was certainly in the top three.
Mm.
You know, as far as how horrible her life was with her husband and how he just so mistreated her. And I think she really articulates so well in the book, you know, why she hung in there, you know, why she didn't leave the marriage, why she thought, you know, these things were normal, how she blamed herself because, you know, he kept blaming her. And she started to believe, you know, that she was doing something wrong. So, I mean, there's so many different wonderful aspects of her story, and she's such a good writer. So I'm really excited that Dolly will be with us to tell her story next Sunday night.
Wonderful.
So, do you have any other announcements that you would like to make, Misty?
I'm just honored that he was on here on the show, and I give him a hug for me, too. And, I'm going to be doing a workshop. I forgot about that. Let me look at the calendar. I think I'm going to do it on Sunday, since this is the day of the show as well, which will be November the 20th. We'll do one that day for the holidays. We'll change around this time because everyone usually can't meet it for all of them, so I'm going to do them like one day at a time. And then the next month, following month in December, I'm going to do a couple for that month. So if you're interested, please let me know. I'll make sure you're on the list. They're going to be small, so everyone has time to participate. You can email me at mistylynnhall@aol.com, mistylynnhall@aol.com. And I will give you more information on that. And that's about it. I can't believe the holidays are almost here. It's crazy.
Right. And I'll also, you know, you'll send me an announcement. I'll put it in the newsletter.
That'll be out in two weeks.
And if anybody's listening who's not receiving the newsletter, please write to me at bonkaye@aol.com. And I'll be happy to put you on my monthly newsletter mailing list and send you a whole bunch of the back ones. And hopefully that will give you the support you need to get you through from week to week till you hear from us. We do want to thank all of our listeners because, you know, it means a lot to us that the show means a lot to you.
Mm.
And we know that we get beautiful letters each week from women who are listening, and we see how many women are listening on our radio show, and that encourages me and Misty to make sure that we're back here trying to bring you informative programming and giving you the support you need. And now that the holidays are about almost on us, won't be long till they first start. This is a time when many women are feeling, you know, really down. And Misty and I plan to give you lots of support during this time. You know, we have our support chat through the holidays, and we're there to help, you know, you whenever you need it. So just drop us a line, and we'll be there for you, right, Misty?
Absolutely. I have I have several sessions, and those usually fill up quick. But if anyone's interested in some private help, feel free to email me. You have no obligations, just to find out the information about it. Because, as Bonnie says, we're approaching the holiday seasons, and it can be quite rough. Don't go it alone. If you need help, you know, I'm an advocate of seeking help when you need it. So if you need it, shoot one of us a line, and we'll make sure you get the help you need.
And also, just wanted to make a mention again, I'm planning to come to Texas in March, the first week of March, or first weekend. So if you're anywhere near Texas or in Texas, if you could email me so we can make arrangements that you can meet with me and some wonderful women who are going to be there. And we're looking towards going to the Austin area, so I'm really excited about that. I've never been there. And so, once again, it's bonkaye@aol.com. So, that's it for this week. And Misty and I look forward to being with you again next Sunday as we talk about issues that affect all of us who are going through, you know, straight wife, you know, support and through gay husband recovery. We will be there for you. So, Misty, I'll let you say goodnight first.
Okay, good night and love to all.
And I'll say the same thing. We love all of you, and we'll talk to you next Sunday night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.